We close out the trilogy of Godzilla animated films this week, finally answering the question of, will this series go down as some of the most disappointing Godzilla movies of all time, or will a strong final showing save it? Watch along with us as we make the historical distinction this week. This is Kaiju vs. History, Godzilla the Planet Eater.
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is a religious alien fanatic threatening extinction, Patrick, and joining me is a human being called naturally good and noble because of its humanity, Miles. Hey, Miles.
What a do, what a do.
Aren't humans just the best?
No.
we're not like these dumb aliens in the movie. We got humanity, which is so good.
I think this movie also explicitly states, no, we are not. Yeah, so this has been a kind of a long ride for us in terms of watching and enjoying some kaiju content. Obviously, if you're listening to this episode, you probably have listened to the prior episodes, which were, especially part two, much less enthusiastic than we have been about most Godzilla projects. And we, of course, talking about the third Godzilla Netflix animated film, Godzilla the Planet Eater, which this one had an actual theatrical release, correct?
Yes. It debuted at the Tokyo IFF in 2018, and I think got a limited theatrical releases throughout the world. But for the most part, you know, I would say the vast majority of its eyeballs came from its Netflix release in the following January, so about 3 months after its theatrical.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, when we last left things, we had the stinger that the god that Mephies has been alluding to this entire series is, in fact, the iconic kaiju villain, Ghidorah, or as they say in some, Ghidorah.
That's how I say it usually. King Ghidorah.
I think I've always said Ghidorah, and then when MF Doom did his monster alter ego, King Ghidorah, which was spelled G-E-E-D-O-R-A-H, and pronounced it that way, I've always pronounced it Ghidorah as a result. I probably as a kid said Ghidorah because I think that's how they said it in the dub. But like now, like anytime I see that visits, I see 3-3 King Ghidorah, take me to your leader. Like I just like I love that album. It's like my favorite MF Doom record.
Makes sense.
Yeah, because he uses samples from Invasion of Astro Monster and stuff in different parts of songs, and it's really good. But before we get into all the shenanigans involving that old gold three-headed dragon, Patrick, tell us, what is in a title?
Gojira Hoshiwo Komono is the original Japanese title. And the Planet Eater is what it comes out to in most of the translations across the world. The translation in Japanese can also come out to Star Eater.
And it also makes sense in respect to the way Ghidorah is portrayed in this.
Yeah, it's like a black hole. And that's an alternative title for the U.S. release, which is Godzilla Eater of Stars. I think that's like the direct translation. The only other real interesting ones, the Hungary translation came out to Interplanetary Destroyer, which just sounds like a great Beastie Boys track.
Yeah, I was saying that Godzilla Interplanetary Destroyer sounds like a rock opera by like Merciful Fate or something, you know?
I gotta say, I dislike this title because the first movie is called Planet of the Monsters, and it's just like too similar, you know. Yeah, they both have planet in it.
It does feel a little uninspired. I tend to agree, even though this one does kind of fit really well because of the nature of Ghidorah in this. And but
it should be like It should be Ghidorah, the planet eater, if that's what you're going for. Godzilla, the planet eater, makes it seem like, is Godzilla eating the planet?
I don't think it's supposed to be Godzilla, the planet eater.
I understand.
It's supposed to be, you know, subtitle, the planet eater. Like, yeah, I'm going to fight the planet eater.
There are a couple of taglines to go over real quick.
As
well. This gold will burn even despair. That's a good one for Ghidorah. Mm-hmm. And then bow down and worship the golden demise. These are taglines for
the film. That's a line from the actual movie, isn't it?
Is it? I don't remember.
I know they talk about the golden demise quite a bit in the prayer.
Right.
So I feel like they say something like it, or like we bow down and anticipate, or something like, I can't remember.
All right. I apologize. I interrupted you like five times for this. What were you about to say?
Oh, no, I was going to say, you know, this despite popular belief that the Heisei era ends with Godzilla versus Destoroyah, this is the actual final Godzilla film in Japan's Heisei era.
Yeah, it's so weird. You know, I really do think of the Reiwa period, like starting so much earlier. But yes, 2019 is the official start. And I'm planning a trip to Japan right now. And every once in a while, when I hit like Google Translate on a page, a date will come up that says, like, you know, 2025 or year 6 Reiwa. They'll still have that as a distinction.
So funny, because like officially / unofficially in the Godzilla chronology, the Reiwa era starts with Shin Godzilla.
Yes.
Which is insane, because that was not even a thing in 2016, but here we are.
No, but that, you know, they demarcate the ages of Godzilla really with those big breaks. And obviously the biggest break was between Shin Godzilla and Final Wars as far as Japanese Godzilla productions go. So that makes sense that is kind of like a restart or a refresher to the universe. But
yeah, because 12 years is probably the longest between Godzilla films, right?
Yes, I believe we talked that Final Wars to Shin Godzilla is the longest gap by like 2 years, I think, compared to the other final gap between 1975 and 84. I guess that's only 9 years between Terror of Mechagodzilla and Return of Godzilla, or Godzilla 1984, whatever. Well, the Japanese one was 84.
Yeah, that was just the Return of Godzilla. Or I think actually there was just called Gojira, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I think what did we call it here on the podcast? I forget.
I think we called it Return of Godzilla because that's the international title, right?
Yes. Yeah, and it'll be a little confusing because I'll be, yeah, like I said, technically there's like four films called Gojira. There's so many movies called Gojira. But yeah, this movie is the last of Heisei, which is so weird to think about Heisei being like about twice as long as like what we in the Kaiju fan community talk about it as. But that this form of dating shows is used for Ultraman and Kamen Rider and a whole bunch of other Japanese tokusatsu, and they actually stick to the actual dates of Reiwa and Heisei and Showa and stuff. So they have huge eras, even though it can be said as well that they usually do stuff like early Heisei or late Heisei and kind of divide it up a little bit that way, because 90s content is so much different from like 2000s. And the same thing goes obviously for Godzilla films. Like technically Shin Godzilla is in the Heisei period, but it doesn't feel like it. And these anime films don't feel like Godzilla films, Miles. I know.
Well, and that's kind of like Toho asked specifically. We went into this in the first episode to take the franchise into a new direction. And the director, Shinzuo, was never a Godzilla fan in the first place, which is like, you know, I get they wanted to do something radical and different, and apparently wanted to cater more to female audiences with a human focused plot, which is all right, fine, whatever. I'm not going to touch that. But that's weird.
Shizuno was not a Godzilla fan, which is fine. There's two directors for this film. Hiroyuki Shishita, I believe, did watch a lot of Godzilla fans. But the fact that three movies and we don't really get until this one a kaiju battle is pretty wild. And technically the kaiju battle is, you know, more like a spiritual battle almost, yeah, in this movie between King Ghidorah and Godzilla Earth.
The one thing that I will definitely say about this that I do really like a lot is some of the concepts. Like, I love the build up for Ghidorah.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, you know, how the kind of slow roll of like, hey, that mother shit that we spent so much time on. Yeah, it's getting killed.
Yeah, for real.
And there's one facet of Ghidorah that I think is really fascinating. And it's that, like, throughout the history of this character, we've always been told that he is a creature of evil. Like, he is just a bad thing. It's made evident in Invasion of Astro Monster, in Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster. And then he kind of pops up with the exception of GMK and the weird stuff they do in 91's Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah. But this is the first movie that I think actively explores that evil. And I think that is one of the most fascinating things about this entire trilogy.
Yeah, it's. And, you know, beyond it being like a space monster, it's like an extra dimensional black hole, like existential threat.
Yes.
More than monster. Even though, very interestingly, this is kind of like a mystical force representation of Ghidorah.
In, yes.
Not really flashbacks, but in like elements of the aliens' destruction in their past, there is a version of Ghidorah that is shown that is much closer to the Showa era monster of a, you know, bipedal three-headed flying dragon. The creature that we get in this film, it's like three distinct snakes.
It's the three heads. We don't know necessarily that if they're like full on attached to a body, but
they're attached to three different black holes.
Well, no, they're coming through three different black holes.
Oh, okay. So
because they remember, like, they talk about how they are from another dimension. They are entering this one through those black holes. So the one thing I do like is that, like, there's this an element of cosmic horror to this version of Ghidorah, which I appreciate a lot. And then while the alien race, who are basically like a super elven fancy hoity-toity version of the Zillions.
Very much so. Very much elf coded.
There's a lot of that I do appreciate. This movie still has the same problems that the other two. It stumbles over itself a lot. A lot of its logic and kind of lore is just kind of given through jargon and esoteric exposition and
dream sequences.
We also have like way too much time is spent on these stupid prayers. Like, come on.
There's like one cool worship sequence where, like,
yeah, there's one cool one.
Start like murdering people and
yeah, there's one cool prayer sequence. I did not need the other like 13. And yeah. I like this idea that, okay, we are now confronted with something that's even worse than Godzilla, and Hatuo has to confront himself, his hatred for Godzilla, and whether that hatred is really justified, which I think is, again, really fascinating. And I love the idea that, you know, he has to actually aid Godzilla so that they can rid the Earth of this evil once and for all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it finally feels like all the plot elements from the previous films are coming together. It does just kind of throw away the characters at the end of the movie.
Like, yeah, so that. we'll get to that, because like for everything this movie does extremely right, it does like 10 things pretty wrong.
But maybe my least favorite, but also I do find it pretty hilarious, is one of the main characters of the entire series in Yuko, who's like, you know, our human female lead. She was one of the pilots in the second film of the, what were they called? The Vultures?
Yeah.
She gets infected with the nanites and is pretty much dead this film. Like, they talk about how she's, like, you know, not completely taken over, but she's, like, not responsive. She has a single line in the movie in a dream.
In a dream sequence, yeah.
Yeah. While she's, like, unconscious, Haru is getting with the Mina and implies in the movie that they have sex, right? Like, they wake up naked together in one scene, which is hilarious because there's just not a lot of sex in Godzilla movies.
Yeah, historically. The way it's kind of described and implied is less of a, I think, a sexual or like a romantically sexual nature. And it's certainly more of a spiritual thing, if that's indeed what actually happens. Because I know that I know he kind of like turns her down at first.
Well, he turns down the one sister and then the other one comes. And
yeah,
I think they do have sex. I think it's implied that like one of the kids in. Did you see the post? Yeah. I think it's a post-credit sequence. I think one of the kids is supposed to be like a child of Haru, but
yeah, I think it's implied. So again, a lot of the character stuff is a little wacky. Again, I don't. So here's my thing about this series. All of my complaints would still stand in terms of the character of Godzilla not really feeling like Godzilla, and some of the human nonsense being idiotic. I do feel like there is so much fat on every single one of these movies that you could probably edit all three down to one pretty decent 2 to 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah, and well, that's the thing.
It might actually be successful.
That first movie, especially, boy howdy, that first movie.
There's still a lot of fat to cut from that one. You can cut out most of the second, except for a couple of sequences, and then cut out chunks of the third, and you have a nice lean 2.5 hour movie. That, like, would I love it? Probably not. But would it make more sense, flow better, and be a lot more tolerable? Absolutely. Because the entire time we've been building up to Ghidorah, and if that was not happening over three movies, you know, that over the course of like a year and a half, I feel like I'd be a lot more lenient on, because I actually like conceptually this take on Ghidorah. It's pretty interesting because you have the kind of like anti-god religion built around it, and this whole idea of like, a worship of destruction, basically. Even though, like, even though every single time Mephis is talking, I'm just like, dude, shut up. You're a moron. you are legitimately dumb. Like, it's one of those things where, like, you hear someone wax, like, that sounds philosophical, and then you kind of, like suss out what they're saying, and I'm just like, never mind, you're an idiot.
He just loves golden death, Miles. He loves golden demise.
Yeah, exactly. I get it. Like, you just say you like shiny things. It's okay. Like, and then I would also, like, remove the frankly moronic ending to this movie.
the characters,
like, okay, so
sacrificing themselves for
they figure out a way to kind of make, so one of the cool things about this is because Ghidorah is extra dimensional, we can see it, we can conceive it, but we can't touch it, we can't interact with it, but it can interact with us because, you know, F you, that's why. But still, a neat idea. And so they find out a way to make it corporeal in this dimension, which allows Godzilla the chance to fight back, which is legitimately a cool moment. Although, like, legit, the second he can fight back, like, Ghidorah does nothing. Like, he just, like, completely goes wrecks
down hard. Those little black holes get blown up.
Like, it's like the end of the 2014 movie, but like that's all the fight. But conceptually, all of that works for me. But like then at the end of the battle, and they're celebrating and everything, for some reason, Mephis is still in Haru's head. Am I saying that right? Is it Haru?
Yeah, our main character.
And it's like, oh no, you've just delayed the inevitable. And so to not delay the inevitable, to make the inevitable never happen, he sacrifices himself and what's her bucket because they have the last bit of the nanometal. Yeah. It doesn't matter. She's got like 12 lines in the entire series. And there's this weird romantic plot that's never resolved, mentioned, or talked about again between those two morons. Like, another thing I would do is like rewrite the characters because they're just, everyone's dumb.
Well, they, you know, like, and
except for the Mothra people.
Yeah, they represent kind of a coexistence with Godzilla in this universe. And the way they get that across is they were really confused when they met the humans and the aliens that came to the planet, because they're like, what do you do to stop Godzilla? Don't you hate Godzilla for what Godzilla did? And they're confused because that's like someone saying, don't you hate hurricanes? Don't you like want to destroy hurricanes? And it's like, well, no, they're just a part of nature. They're like, you know, they're terrible like when they happen, but it's like, how can you hate something that's basically unthinking? It's just like
that and they're evolved from guts.
Yeah, so I mean they're all part of like the same world, and that's when Haro decides to kind of kill himself, basically to offer him up to Godzilla, because he represents an element of human nature that is incongruous with this new world that exists 20,000 years in his future. And he basically takes down the hatred of Godzilla with him. And in that post credits, or is that post credit sequence, or is it just part of the end of the movie? I forget.
I think it's post credit.
Yeah, they show the descendants of the folks that have come to live with the Hutua burning effigies of the vultures. So like they're like kind of like the boogeyman, I think, of that world. But some very interesting highbrow concepts that I would love in a better series of films. I would absolutely love them. And I will end up loving some similar highbrow concepts in the next animated Godzilla project in the Singular Point. Boy, howdy.
Yes.
Some comparing and contrasting between those movies. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about this film that we haven't already spoken on a great deal in the last two movies.
Yeah, that's the bummer, is like outside of the individual Ghidorah parts. Also, I do love that like throughout the movie they use the OG Ghidorah like chirp.
Yeah, that's some pretty important connective tissue between these films. This movie, we also get like an outline, like a shadow of Mothra represented in dreams.
Like they absolutely drop the ball on the Mothra part.
They go out of their way not to show you what Mothra looks like in this universe. They actually technically don't show you what Ghidorah looks like. The only way people know what Ghidorah looks like is they did release toys
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I put one of them in our notes here of a technically a creature we never see in full light. It's only in dreams.
Yeah. You know, they 100% released that because like, they were like, come on, you know what Ghidorah looks like. Who cares?
Yeah, I guess, but
we're slapping the Godzilla anime Netflix thing on the box, but you're buying a Ghidorah toy. I mean, and not even a good one.
No, I mean, they probably made a few different ones.
This thing looks like it came from a McDonald's box.
To be fair, if I found a Godzilla Earth toy, I would probably be interested in getting it. I think it looks kind of cool. And the poster for this movie of like this giant Leviathan snake like looking glowing Ghidorah. Yeah, around, like almost completely surrounding Godzilla. Also looks cool, and it happens in the movie, which is also an important point.
It definitely has that vibe of like the 91 painting, which is, I mean, a great use of Ghidorah as well. No, I mean,
one of the best.
Yeah, I got that hanging on my wall.
Surprisingly, some pretty good scores from the few critics that did rate this movie on Rotten Tomatoes. 60% on the tomato meter, which is not rotten, surprisingly, but the audience score is much lower. It's 29%.
Also makes sense.
Yeah, but I feel like that's the lowest of the three. Maybe not. I should double check on that.
I can't imagine it being lower than the second one. That's ridiculous.
Let me just compare it to the first one real quick. Planet of the Monsters. Planet of the Monsters. Much higher. Well, not much higher, but an equivalent higher raise for both the critics and the audience of about 15%. The first movie has a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes for critics and a 43% for audience. So basically enjoyed just slightly more, just a couple points more than this one. I'm kind of the opposite camp. I mean, I don't know if we want to get into rating and in reviewing, but I think I like this one more than the first movie.
Oh, absolutely. This is, I would say, in terms of just kind of like execution of some of its concepts, I think it's the most successful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you know, I'm now that we're done with this series, I am wondering, would this have worked better as 9 episodes of a TV series, which just so happens to be about the same amount of time that Godzilla Singular Point has to sell a story.
I am still singular film. I think the problem is there's still too much like crap in here that needs to be trimmed down. And I don't think splitting it in 9 episodes would really help me at all, because then there's like entire episodes where absolutely nothing happens except someone yaps for 20 minutes, which is, I mean, fine and all, but like at the same time, I really feel like this just doesn't really work as a trilogy. I mean, because I know that it feels, or I know that, like, you know, it does, each one has a, you know, beginning, middle, and end, but I think the story itself, like, is a 3-act structure with each film really not being a singular film. It's just the act 1, act 2, and act 3 in a way that I think hurts the overall story personally.
Yeah. Do you want to jump into rating the movie, Miles?
Yeah, let's do it.
Where you see this for personal enjoyment, I am at a 7 out of 10. I think I rated the other two kind of in the 6 territory. And I think this one, just because it is building up on the themes from the previous two movies, is the best out of all of them. It is probably the one that kept me the most entertained, even though all three of them have a good half hour of the lead up of the film. That is a lot of exposition. This one, you know, because it's coming like very much on the heels of the action of the second movie, still feels, I guess, a little more frantic. But yeah, like this the most of the three. It's still not very good or not great. It just lacks the required oomph to push it into great territory. So 7 out of 10 for me. Miles, what about you?
Yeah, I'm actually right there with you. This is my favorite of the three for several reasons. And yeah, I'm looking at the scores I gave. The first one was a 6. The second one was a 5. I'm kind of with you. It's a 7. Like there's a lot of imperfections. But in terms of like, can I sit back and enjoy at least, like, hey, they are going to kind of race against time and Godzilla's in trouble and Godzilla Earth can't even top this thing. And, you know, there's a lot of good concepts here. Like they really are, like, despite how idiotically some of them are executed, I do think the concepts are really solid. There's a good foundation for this entire trilogy. I truly believe if you cut this all down to one singular movie, it might be more successful. I still wouldn't like a lot of choices made, but I think it would really let the entire story sing. But yeah,
release the Miles cut. Do it yourself, Miles. Cut it down.
I'm gonna toe for grace this thing.
Yeah,
don't tempt me. I got nothing. Things to do, man. I do think that this is a pretty solid, at least it's the most solid of the three, and it has some of the most satisfying stuff. It also, like, again, just has things that like drive me nuts. But I remember thinking several times, yeah, this is doing some interesting things. This is doing some things I want them to do. Like, yeah, this is a 7 is a decent score. It's probably a little too kind, but because I gave the first one a 6, I can't abide giving this a lower score or the same score as that one. So yeah, it's going to get a 7.
Yeah. They're both in that kind of good to very good.
I'm just good
area, which Well, good. Six is good on our scale. Yeah, 7 is very good.
It's baseline good. It's, yeah, on that border of very good, but like, yeah, by the hair of its chinny chin chin.
Yeah, I was about to say, if we did half points on these scores, maybe this is a 6.5. Oh,
100% a 6.5.
What about the technical aspects of this film? Where do you rest on that?
Yeah, so this one's a little trickier for me because, you know, none of the movies have really looked bad. And the technical aspects of these movies have kind of consistently been the strongest point. I know I gave the last one some really high marks because of all of the design work and because of the score that absolutely sung. This one I'm a little more critical on because of that script. Everything else about the last two in terms of its voice acting and the character designs stays true. I like the concept of Geeta that they go with. I actually like these kind of three heads coming through the black hole. I just really love the cosmic horror concept. But I do think that a lot of, because you see a lot of the philosophy and the dream state stuff come through, it feels kind of like they're really wanting to kind of ape Evangelion a little bit in that respect. And I think that stuff in the script just falls completely flat. And so for that reason,
you didn't like the Enola Gay showing up. He's riding the Enola Gay.
And for that reason, I'm giving it a 7 as well. It's certainly like this one is mostly very good. I wish its concepts were better executed and done so in a way that like every single one of these movies just spins its wheels so much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's no reason for like that many prayer sequences.
Yeah. Yeah. Our main alien is very interesting, or our main villain of this film, I think, compared to the alien villain in the previous film. But the general storyline of these religious aliens kind of going bonkers, I did enjoy more than the second film. And it just really rams home how there's just like really nothing to that first movie. If we're in your miles cut, Miles, I feel like you should be using like 20 minutes tops from that first movie.
100%. So much of that thing is getting absolutely cut. You don't need
the first Godzilla at all.
I would probably cut a lot of the stuff on the ship, not all of it.
Yeah. I was about to say, you can very much, I mean,
like having them, like, it would start with them coming to Earth, I think.
Having just seen Mickey 17, it's a very similar story, and they only have about 15 minutes on the ship, maybe max, before they get to the main place where the movie takes place, which is a planet. Yeah, this movie does finally, though, I mean, it's crazy that we had to wait through 4 hours of other films, but finally, there is two kaiju fighting one another in this three film series. And
yeah,
I cannot believe they didn't have one in the second movie. Like, they tease Mothra, tease Mechagodzilla. But yeah, at least it does happen in this movie. I think this movie does look the best of the three, technically speaking. Like, I think the animation is firing all cylinders. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways. And yeah, just going back and comparing it to the first one, I think this one is the best technically. So I'm also going to give it a little higher score than I've given, I think, the previous ones. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10 for its technical aspects. But that leaves us our final scoring category, which is its importance as a kaiju movie. I can't give it any more points than I have the other two films. I think this entire series is kind of spinning its wheels in a lot of ways, and this movie just isn't enough to save the trilogy as a whole, even though this is a very good one. These very high sci-fi concepts are all interesting, but in a different movie, you know. It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy though. Like I said, in just a few short years, we are going to get a Godzilla anime that does the monsters, the characters in the universe, and very high sci-fi concepts in a much more interesting ways. And it has multiple kaiju versus mech robot fights. You know, there's like there's just like so much more to that series. And even that series isn't perfect, but it's maybe I'm spoiled because I watched Godzilla Singular Point before this one. But
right.
Where do you rate the importance of Godzilla, the Planet of the Apes?
I'm right there with you. It's a 5 out of 10. It's one of the weakest stories in the Godzilla canon. Does it have potential? Does it have great ideas? Yes, mm-hmm. But it's going to be one of the last things I would ever suggest someone watch in terms of the Godzilla franchise. This is bottom of the franchise for me, which is still pretty solid for a lot of things. I mean, these are still decent scores for anything else, you know, in that respect. You know, it's not like a Queen Kong situation, but
Kong.
I appreciate it. Toho wanting to do something different with the franchise, especially like, hey, we have anime and you can do anything with it because, hey, you don't need $100 million to make crazy stuff happen. And I think what's so disappointing is this is what they chose to make. You know, I can think of a million other crazy ideas that would have been like way cooler. And there's so many stuff done like the IDW comics that would have been insanely wacky and fun. This doesn't really, I think, take advantage of the special situation they were given. And it's unfortunate. It's very weak. Is it bad? I wouldn't say fully bad, which is why mm-hmm. we're not giving it bad scores fully. But like it does completely kind of it's a flaccid attempt to execute somewhat decent ideas. And that's unfortunate. Sometimes you take a big swing and you strike out. And that's, I think, what this is.
Yeah. If it was just one movie, you know, and that's the other thing.
Yeah.
I feel like I would be.
My patience would have been.
I would have been less harsh, you know?
Yeah.
But it is crazy that they strung this out over a 3-film trilogy.
I think if this was edited into one movie, you have a potential 7, maybe 8 out of 10 flick on your hands.
Yeah. Like you said, if the Miles cut ever comes out, but
not just the Miles cut, but like also like the script needs some work too. Like that, mm-hmm. the script is still a problem no matter how you cut it. So like that's still a situation for me. But like yeah, if I ever have enough free time and that bored, yes, one day we might get Netflix's Godzilla, the Miles cut. But it's the exact opposite of the Snyder cut, where I'm taking something that's like 6 hours long and editing it into like maybe 2.
Right. So that is going to give my final score a soft 7 and you're a pretty hard 6. And unfortunately, that doesn't raise Godzilla the Planet Eater. We're right there in the middle, but we are rounding down to a 6 out of 10, which means the entire trilogy is a 6 out of 10.
Bom, bom, bom.
So pretty much there at the bottom of the Godzilla series universe, you enjoyed All Monsters Attack a little bit more, and I enjoyed it a little bit less. I think it's because it's consistently kind of the same score. I feel like we do have to put these at the bottom as far as kind of our rankings go for the podcast. Mm-hmm. Yes. I would definitely suggest someone watch All Monsters Attack, as bad as it is, over these films, because that movie is only like 70 minutes long, you know.
Oh, no. I'm a defender of All Monsters Attack, and you know this.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, as far as like where it sits in the Godzilla ranking, sadly, or maybe positively, a 6 out of 10 is going to be the worst Godzilla score that we give out. I'm pretty happy that nothing fell into
knowing both average of us and know what films we have in the future for this franchise. Yeah, this is.
Oh, I can confidently say none of the other legendary films are bad.
Right, like but, we have legendary films, we have Singular Point, and we have -1, and I'm.
I just can't. Is there going to ever be a Godzilla movie that can just swing and a miss as hard as these 3 films? Yeah, it's hard. Ooh. It's hard to imagine. I guess anything's possible, but yeah, 6 out of 10. That is our final for the Planet Eater. That's all the Planet Eater. Where can folks find us, Miles, if they want to chat about Godzilla?
Well, if you want to chat about Godzilla, you can check out our website, kaijuversehistory.com. You can email us at kaijuversehistory@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Blue Sky at Kaiju Versus History. Please rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends. Let us know what you think. Check out our letterbox, Kaiju Versus History, to see all our reviews and watch our list of films. And if you really want to talk to us in real time, you can go to our sister show's website, cosmiccrit.com. Click on the Cosmic Crit Discord. It will take you to a magical land that's all about science fiction, tabletop role-playing games. But there is a channel there dedicated to Kaiju Versus History where you can talk to Patrick and I in real time about any kaiju thing you want to while we are bored at work. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Well, the most recent thing you posted
on
social media was... No, I was going to say...
I was talking about Blue Sky. I was like, shut up.
No, Takashi Yamazaki, the director of Minus One, meeting Bong Joon-ho and saying that they should make a monster movie together. And I was like, yes, please.
Yeah. That's all I need is like those two guys together. Like, heck yeah. It's and both of them have like the biggest like grins on their faces too.
Yeah. Right. So that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you, Miles. Thank you, listeners. We're going to catch you on the next one when we look at a Japanese film that harkens back to Japan's historic kaiju past while reuniting some of the genre's biggest stars. Very short project. Will Tokyo survive its divine encounter with a giant statue? Find out along with us next time for History versus the Great Buddha Arrival.